We have someone new joining us on Wine Country Live this morning, a guest that I looked forward to chatting with, who goes by the moniker of the Constrained Gourmet. Sandra Richardson is with us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Barry. Thank you for having me.
You bet. The title I mentioned earlier when I promoted this segment coming up kind of says it all.
It does.
Right? Two words tells me exactly what you're about. Good job. But explain it in more detail. What is the Constrained Gourmet?
Well, you know, very simply, it's a resource to navigate the constraints of cooking and entertaining. And I provide techniques to deal with cooking challenges and produce a gourmet meal when you're faced with the constraints of life.
Yeah, which are many.
They are. You know, it's time. You know, no one has time anymore. That's so precious. Lack of skill, missing an ingredient, you know, not having proper kitchen tools, faced with a tight budget. Your mood can be part of that, wine pairings. And I think as many of us have experienced in the last week, cooking without power can be a challenge.
Add one to your list. All those things you just listed just make me want to go out for dinner.
which
is a great option right here, but also very, very expensive. So
it is. And, you know, there are so many challenges that we face. If you think about it in your job, right, that you can bring to entertaining at home and learning how to cook and deal with those kind of challenges. And, you know, one of those is planning. And I used to own a software company with my husband, and it had a component of project management. And so I really saw that there was this way to bring a lot of the skills that we have in our professional life into what we're doing in our home. And, you know, in terms of going out all the time, you know, some people do that, and that's fine for them. It is sometimes a health challenge for some people because there's a lot of salt typically that you need to, you know, navigate around. But, you know, if you apply kind of planning skills to your week, you know, how am I going to have all the necessary ingredients to make food for my family? Or when you are having a dinner party, planning is so important because, you know, the first time I ever had a dinner party when I was in my early 20s, I did everything that day. By the time I served dessert, I was so exhausted.
Right.
My, you know, eyes where I was falling asleep. So I learned that there's so many things you can do in advance that will help you to navigate that. You know, like your linens can be ironed weeks in advance. That's not going to hurt anything. You know, buy your flowers, do your wine shopping all in advance, do your grocery shopping and make it, you know, I give advice to when you're writing out your grocery list, think about how the grocery store is laid out and do your list in that order, and it's going to save you a lot of time going from the produce section to the cheese section when you've forgotten something. So there's just, you know, really planning techniques that you can incorporate in your daily life that are going to help you with a lot of the constraints you're going to face.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go back a step to where did this idea germinate? A lot of times people have one particular event that led them to the idea that they want to do something.
Yeah. So I talk about this a bit on my blog, but when I was in technology, my husband and I one summer rented a beach house, and we loved this beach house. It was so beautiful, the location. It was right on the beach, and we got to spend the summer there. But the beach house itself was really like a shack on the beach, and the kitchen was a disaster. I mean, the oven only worked at two particular temperatures. The stovetop had missing components to it. I mean, I had, you know, maybe five kitchen utensils. And I produced so many wonderful meals that summer. And when I got back to my kitchen at home with, you know, everything in the world in it, like a Williams-Sonoma store, I realized that It wasn't the tools that I had. It was me that was being creative and coming up with ways to make all of this really, these great meals, even when I didn't have the resources to do it. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of started me on this path that was really, I guess, the germinating idea of it. And also just being a really busy person and but loving to entertain and dealing with all of these problems and, you know, realizing that with some creativity and planning, you can address most of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. We're talking with Sandra Richardson, the Constrained Gourmet. And is your blog your primary communication method?
It is, yes. I mean, I'm on all the social media channels as well, so you can reach me there. And I try to be very good about making sure that anything new that I've posted gets posted on those channels. But yes, my blog is, I think, quite comprehensive. And I have offerings for both the home cook and entertainer as well as corporate offerings. And in for corporate, it's not as much about, you know, one particular home event, but more of corporate events and the constraints around that.
Is that an area that you've worked in, event planning and all that?
Yes, yes. I don't do any catering, but I work with caterers on events. But I really focus on, for corporate, the strategy of the event and how do you differentiate it? Because the constraint with corporate is typically something like, you know, your fundraising and you want to differentiate yourself. I mean, we've all been to a million charity dinners and, you know, the same high net worth individuals get invited to all of them. And at some point, you know, you kind of look at it and say, you know, what's different about this? Mm-hmm. And why am I compelled to give or to be here or to support this, mm-hmm. you know, particular organization? And so, you know, we've learned a lot from millennials, actually. You know, they have really forced us to make events different and make something that's not just, you know, who wants to go to the same event, charity wine dinner, and, you know, it all depends the table that you're sitting at, whether it's interesting or boring. You know, so I really try to focus on making the event differentiated, depending on what they're trying to do, you know, in alignment with their strategy event.
What did you mean when you said millennials have forced this?
Well, you know, they have really made us look at events in a different way, you know, forcing us to think about how the event is differentiated and special and unique. That's what they want. You know, that's what they're looking for when they go to events. And so, you know, a lot of times they will make a decision to go based on posting it on social media, you know, showing something interesting that they're doing at this event. Mm-hmm. And so it's forced event planners to really come up with unique ways to reach their constituency and make them feel like they've done something, you know, they've gotten something for their money, let's say.
Yeah. Not to be horribly cliche, but, you know, always make sure you have some good place to pose for selfies.
Right.
I mean, that's actually part of it now, right? Like, here's the selfie station. Here's the sculpture you can interact with. Here's the sign.
If it's not there,
I mean, how do we behave? So when we head into this holiday time of the year, the constraints increase, especially the time factor, energy factor. More people want a part of you, you know, through the holidays. What are some thoughts you have about that? I mean, we're in mid-October. There's still plenty of time for good planning for Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah and everything else that's coming up.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's so much stress around the holidays. And, you know, we all love our families, but that can be stressful in and of itself. And especially if you come from a family where it's a mixed family and kids are going from one home to another, or, you know, your Uncle Joe is on the different side of the political spectrum than you, and you have to sit there, you know, and smile through the holiday dinner. I mean, there's just a lot of stress associated with getting together with your family. And you know, beautiful moments as well. Let's not forget those. But, you know, again, I would really stress planning is just so key. And on my website, I don't have anything particular for Thanksgiving, but I have dinner party plans where what I've done is I've worked 1 month out. And so I sit down and I put together basically a project plan. It says, what do I do from 1 month out every single week, you know, to get prepared for it, and then down to that day, a minute-by-minute guide. And I actually do that myself at home because, you know, turkey in this time, turkey out this time, and then all the things that need to be done in between. And it helps you. It really helps you not be so stressed because, you know, the worst thing, in my opinion, is going to anybody's home and the host or hostess is really stressed out. It just makes you feel uncomfortable and, you know, you don't want to lounge on the couch and be enjoying yourself when there's somebody really stressed out in the kitchen. And so if you think about it and you prepare your day and you know exactly what you need to do, the order of it, it's extremely liberating, you know, because, and also, you know, the other component of it is in our entertaining now, it's become much more collaborative, you know, so if you have somebody who's great, you know, tending the bar, give it to them. You know, have them do the cocktails and make sure wine glasses are always filled while you're doing the last minute mashed potatoes or whatever it is. But there's also a lot of things for Thanksgiving in particular that you can do in advance that people don't realize. You know, you have to remember that caterers and restaurants don't do everything at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't either. Don't put that stress on yourself. Yeah. You know, research what you're making, understand what can be done in advance, and do as much of that as possible. So on the day of the event, you're enjoying yourself too.
Yeah, that's one of my my least favorite experiences is when a person who's gone to the extreme of throwing a party or hosting a holiday event just seems to be hating it because it's turned out either not as well as they expected or people aren't doing what they thought they were going to do. And I don't know, it's like a thinking it through thing that's also part of that planning. Like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah, it is. And part of it also, and this is something that I stress a lot on the blog, is don't make something for the first time when you're having a dinner party. That produces so much stress in and of itself. And I do this quite frequently. You know, my husband calls it test kitchen day, where if there's something that I want to make when I'm entertaining, I always test it. You've got to test recipes for a lot of different reasons, you know, but test it first and also cook things that you know that you don't necessarily have to follow a recipe, you know, things that are innate for you that you just know how to cook. It's going to be so much easier. And it's the stress of doing something new for the first time when you have, you know, 10 people standing there is going to make that situation. Yeah.
I so learned that lesson. I don't get much time to cook. I don't hate it. I'm not particularly good at it. There's just a few things I know how to do. And over time, I've finally figured out if I'm making some food, whether it's just for myself or somebody else, why do I feel the need to try something I don't know how to do? If I'm hungry enough and I want to feed myself, I don't want to end up with a mistake. You know, it's like, how do I don't have time to take a cooking class, but you know what I'm saying. I stick to certain things now that I've figured out.
I mean, I do the same thing, you know, and I really stress to people, have 3 or 4 dinners that you are really good at making and use those as your fallback. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, sometimes people think something is good and maybe your guests don't. So, you know, I would also ask
examples,
you know, ask for feedback. you know, maybe if, especially if you have somebody who's attending that's close to you, like a sister or an aunt or an uncle or, you know, somebody who can really give you the real feedback to tell you, you know, hey, Sandra, maybe you shouldn't make that again. It didn't go so well.
Does everybody love my clam dip as much as I love my clam dip?
Yeah. Don't you love the 8 tons of garlic I put in it? Yeah, that kind of thing.
You know, some people might say there's a solution to all this angst and work and trouble, and that's, you know, potluck style, bring a dish style. Others, you know, I know people who don't ever have that kind of a party. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's individual. If you like it, do it. The thing that I have seen go terribly wrong with potlucks is that there's no cohesive plan, and people bring all these completely different dishes that don't go together. Mm-hmm. So if you're having a potluck, I think there should be a strategy or some kind of, we're going to do, you know, an Asian food buffet, or, you know, we're going to do turkey and bring something that goes with that. But give direction, because, you know, what's weird at those sometimes is that the foods don't go together, and then they don't get eaten, and that's what you don't want to have happen.
You feel like you're at the church basement too. That's the other thing. What's that? Let me try a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and you have this bizarre plate full of stuff.
Yeah.
We're talking again with Sandra Richardson, the Constrained Gourmet, and you'll find the blog on the website constrainedgourmet.com. And it seems awfully timely, the subtitle, Techniques to Stay Gourmet When Life Gets in the Way, which is constantly. In terms of, you know, even when you talk about the planning that you're doing, you have to create time to do the planning too. So how do you get started on this new way of approaching stuff?
Yes, I know that planning does take time, but especially in my previous professional experience, I can tell you that the time that you take for planning is you are going to get that back in spades on the back end. If you don't plan, you tend to work in a haphazard way. I mean, think about it. If you're doing a project at work, you don't just get a team of people and start executing it. You plan out what you're going to do. How many people will I need? How long is this going to take? What are we trying to accomplish? It's the same thing in entertaining. And so if you use those techniques to make sure that you plan appropriately, you know, as I said earlier, that day that you're having the party is going to go so smoothly and you're going to feel so much better. It's going to really pay you back in spades.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about coming up with this idea, but we didn't talk very much about you. You mentioned that you had a software company at one point. Give us more. Where did you come from? Was food really important growing up? Those kind of things.
Yeah. So I have a very kind of interesting family dynamic. My dad was from the Midwest and my mother is from Northern Italy. And so my dad loved to eat and my mom loved to cook. So I have both of those. you know, we had dinner every night together. My mom is an exceptional cook and entertainer, so I learned all of that from her. And, you know, I've always loved, even to this day, you know, in my family, we sit down and have dinner together every night. And
wow,
most of the time I cook.
Yeah, that's rare.
It is rare, but it's a special time of the day. You know, I think we all look forward to it because it's the time of day when we get to, you know, kind of wind down and enjoy a meal rather than something on the run. And, you know, I don't know if there was a moment that I was like, oh, I'm a foodie, because I don't know that anybody does that. But when I was a very young professional and I was making nothing, I saved all my money to go to the best restaurant right outside of Washington, D.C., one of the best restaurants in the country, for my birthday. So, you know, that kind of shows that even then I was thinking about it. When I graduated from college, instead of getting a briefcase, my family gave me an 8-piece set of fine china because I was going to start entertaining. So, you know, I've always loved it, but I think as I really started to do more entertaining when I was in technology, I really started to, you know, try to figure out these trade-offs of how I could do it all. Because I was, you know, running a company and traveling, you know, I was just crazy busy, but I wanted to entertain, and so I had to figure it out. And the other part of it was, anybody who's in technology knows that software is never finished. You think it's done, you launch it, but it's never done. And that started to wear on me from a personal perspective, and what I realized was that cooking could be my therapy to that, because I could go into the kitchen and on a Sunday make a pie from start to finish, mm-hmm. I could complete something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it gave me that, you know, thing that I needed in my life to just have completion of things and not, you know, have something that I'm doing take forever.
You never get a message, you know, in the kitchen of, you know, the pie is now updating and, you know, do not turn off your stove. Very interesting. The sense of accomplishment, you know, in even simple things cooked, the meal prepared, here it is on the plate.
It is. It is. And, you know, for people who are trying to learn how to cook, one of the things I always tell them, just go try. Get in the kitchen on a weekend when you're not stressed out for time and try something. You know, call your mom and get the recipe of your favorite thing that she used to make you when you were a kid growing up so that you know what it should taste like and what the aromas should be. But also conversely, you know, don't try a recipe that's 3 pages long with, you know, 15, 20 ingredients. Mm-hmm. Pick things. If you notice on my blog, most of my recipes, I mean, I cook very simply. 5 to 7 ingredients, you know, 4 to 5 steps. I don't really do a lot of complex cooking like that because I don't like it either. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's really finding those things that are simple to do to give you the confidence that once you've completed them, you feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing more daunting than having an enthusiasm to make something and then discovering you either don't have utensils or cookware or the skills, you don't know how to core an apple or, you know, whatever the problems are. You know, like, what's going on here? And then you get frustrated and you know, order pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Sandra Richardson is the Constrained Gourmet. We're going to come back after a break and talk a little more about some ideas going into the holidays, I think would be a good topic. Yeah, we'll do that. So stick around. More to come here on Wine Country Live. Sandra Richardson, who is the person behind something called the Constrained Gourmet. And like I said earlier, it says a lot in two words. We want to eat well, we want to live well in Napa. And there's a certain amount of peer pressure. I want to ask you about this, too, in terms of the entertaining thing. Some people I know, it's kind of a contest all the time. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think you should know yourself and be really comfortable with the way that you entertain and have your own style, which you develop over the years. But you shouldn't, you know, do this, you know, keeping up with the Joneses thing because some people may have a lot more money to spend on wine than you do or, you know, different ingredients. But you should be true to yourself because, again, you're not going to come off as authentic if you're trying to be something that you're not. And conversely, if you're not a good entertainer, please don't do it. You know, you know, you can entertain people at restaurants. You don't have to have them in your home. But if you're going to do it in your home, then you really do need to be good at it. And, you know, I think that people sometimes think that entertaining is about them, but it's actually not. It's all about your guests. And when they come to your home, they are your priority. You know, ensuring that their needs are met, that they're happy, you know, that is where you put your energy, not about you and how you look. Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes back to be authentic and have a style that represents you. Because, you know, it's fine if you're the greatest barbecuer in the world, do that. Don't try to, you know, do something that you're not comfortable with because everyone loves barbecue. You know, they'll be happy to do that. And if your friends are really your friends, you know, they'll be happy to be with you in whatever authentic style you have.
Good point. So if you're people you're inviting suddenly start turning down your invitations, you know they weren't really your friends in the first place.
That's right.
What about catering and buying things that are prepared? Do you ever do that?
You know, not very often, just because I'm a crazy person who cooks all the time. But I don't think there's anything wrong with it as long as, once again, you've tested it in some way, because sometimes you do buy packaged items or prepared food that is not maybe of the quality that you would like. Mm-hmm. Just because someone's a caterer doesn't mean that that particular item that you're buying is their best. So test it, you know, and make sure that you're happy with it, mm-hmm. and it represents what you would want to serve.
Mm-hmm. For some people, I would guess that ordering food, carry out, or having a caterer provide for a party with your friends is a cop-out, or it does not show enough commitment, you know, to what you're doing.
That's just not true. Okay. I mean, you know,
About your answer.
When I was giving big parties, you know, for my software company, I would almost always have them catered because I didn't have the time to cook for that many people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I did, you know, when I could make that happen, but I knew who I was working with. I had tested them. I'd had that, you know, those items. I was really comfortable in calling them up and having them bring stuff over that I'd had before.
Yeah, that's a good plan. So we were talking a little bit earlier, the holidays are looming. One of the issues you mentioned when we get into the potluck scenario is how things don't work together and people make things in different ways. You end up with this melange. Thanksgiving is ripe for that too, mm-hmm. because often people, you know, I'll bring the sweet potatoes and blah, blah. How do you head off a train wreck of styles of cooking and flavors and types of ingredients, and you know, and adding into that, you also have all the restricted diets people have these days. Mm-hmm. When you do, like, can you bring a dish? Well, can you also make sure it's, you know, gluten-free, vegan, no salt, whatever, right?
Yeah, that it gets a little bit more complex when you start to do that. But, I mean, typically, if you're having, like, Thanksgiving dinner, it's with your family, you know, you all know that about each other. But what I would say is if you're the host or hostess, it is your party. And so, you know, feel free to be very specific about what you want the person to bring. If you're asking them to bring stuffing, then you need to say, you know, I want you to bring Uncle Joe's oyster stuffing that we all used to have as a kid. Make sure you say that. Or, you know, I want you to bring an apple pie, because if you say bring dessert, you could end up with a chocolate cake. You know, and what is it that you are responsible for making sure that you don't end up with this, like, weird group of foods?
Mm-hmm. So specific directions.
Specific directions.
If somebody balks at that, just cut them from the list.
Go eat by yourself.
Your invitation is rescinded. People will be in touch.
And with the special diets and things, I mean, I really do try to accommodate that because I see it as a challenge and something as a fun challenge as opposed to feeling burdened by it. You know, I think that if you have celiac disease, we certainly don't want you to be ill. But for the people who are just like, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't eat bread, well, you know, we're going to have stuffing. If you don't want it, then just don't eat it, you know? And I think that in my experience, people who have allergies and things like that are so appreciative when you actually do something out of your way for them. So, you know, I try to accommodate it as much as possible, but at the same time, if it's Thanksgiving dinner and you're serving a traditional Thanksgiving dinner, you can tell them that. Mm-hmm. They don't want to come. That's mm-hmm. fine.
Yeah. Or they can pack a lunch.
Regularly. Right. Yeah.
Show up with their goodies. Do you get a great sense of satisfaction in the entertaining process? I feel that you must. And where does that happen? Is it when everybody sits down to eat, or is it the end of the evening when they're gone? You know, how does that feel?
Oh, yeah, that's a great, great question. I actually do get a lot of satisfaction out of it personally. And I have a very special friend that we see socially quite a bit. And this gentleman really loves everything that I cook. And he communicates that to me during the dinner. And it makes me feel so good. Like, I love cooking for people who love to eat and drink and have fun during dinner. And, you know, it's if I find that there's somebody who, you know, maybe doesn't like what I've made or doesn't give me that feeling back, you know, sometimes I just don't invite them again. I find somebody else who I think is on my same, you know, wavelength in terms of what they like to eat and enjoy, because I don't have a lot of time to do it. And when I do it, I want it to be something that we all enjoy. And so, you know, you seek out those people, I guess. Those are, you know, the ones that you seek out to invite to your home, because inviting someone to your home is, you know, very personal. Yeah. And you want that to be a good experience for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about wine a little bit. Again, getting into the holidays or just in general, when you're invited, often people bring bottles of wine. For some persons, that's going to be whatever is there to grab. Other people are going to give that some thought about, what do I want to bring? Do I want to have something that I've saved from my cellar? Or is it just, you know, stopping off at the store on the way? What are your thoughts about that, and how do you avoid, for me, it would be like offending people by bringing something either that they think is not good or is not expensive enough or doesn't go or they can't drink it now, you know?
This is a question that I get a lot, actually, revolving around wine and what's appropriate in entertaining. And first of all, I'll just say, please don't ever go to anybody's house without bringing anything. Either, you know, I mean, wine is kind of what we all do. We always bring a bottle of wine, but, you know, go a little bit extra. Bring some flowers, bring some chocolates. You know, this person has put in a lot of effort to entertain you, and I think it's incredibly rude if you show up without anything.
Right.
So first of all, definitely bring something. And, you know, the question that I get a lot about wine is does the host or hostess required to open the bottle of wine that I bring? Mm. I get that a lot. Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. They are not required to open it. I mean, if you coordinate with them in advance and there's some discussion about, hey, will you bring, you know, a German Riesling for our scallops that we're having as an appetizer, then that is a little bit different. But generally, you should not expect the host or hostess to open it. And the reason is because they've planned and bought all the wines that specifically go with those different courses, and they can't be expected then to serve something that may not be a good pairing, because what we have to remember is that food has a very strong effect on wine, more so than vice versa. And food can destroy a wine, the taste of it. And so you have to really think about it and think about your pairings. And sometimes people go through a great deal of effort to find a particular wine that goes with a food. So they are not required to. So what I would say is, you know, talk to your host or hostess, because if you're bringing something from your cellar that's 25 years old and then they don't open it and you're offended, you know, I mean, that can be a bad situation. I mean, we just had a party at our house where our neighbors had a bunch of wines from 1996 specifically. And I designed a whole menu of foods that went with those wines. And so we had a, you know, long conversation about what they were bringing and what, you know, I designed foods that went with it. And so we knew we were going to have all of the wines that they brought. But typically, if you bring wine, don't expect it to be opened.
Mm. How was that 96 vintage, by the way?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was a great party, let's say that.
I have a problem with what you just said, and I'm going to be really honest. When I would say 9 times out of 10, when I bring a bottle, I want to drink that bottle. It's a bottle that I know I'm going to like, and I don't know if I'm going to like anything else they have, you know? And that would not be applicable to a party with courses and wine served with each course. That's a different animal, but I don't go to that many of that kind. More often, you know, it's the classic Napa thing. Everybody's brought a bottle, boom, they all end up on the counter, and people start opening things. That's where I run into, you know, a frustration.
Yeah.
It's
Well, I think if it's that kind of a party, right, it's a little bit less stringent on its exact pairing. And you would expect that to be opened. And many times, actually, when people come to my home and they bring wines, they're really nice wines, and I open them with the meal because they go.
Right.
I mean, everybody here, you know, typically brings Napa wines, and those go with a lot of the things that we're making, because mm-hmm. we all know what, you know, grows together goes together. Mm-hmm. And so usually it's a good match. Mm-hmm. But I would say if it's a party like that, then it should be opened.
Yeah.
If it's like everybody's bringing wine and there's lots of different kinds of food, then, that would kind of make me wonder why they're not opening the wine. Do they're trying to save it for later,
right,
or something? But generally, you know, the rule is you bring it. It's a gift for the host or hostess to do with it whatever they want.
Keep that in mind. Maybe I should bring two. Maybe I should bring one that's a gift, and this is what I'm going to open right now.
Or maybe don't bring your best wine.
I really want to drink this. I'll be over in the next room drinking this wine by myself while you guys have this party. That's my ideal. We're talking again with Sandra Richardson, the Constrained Gourmet, and heading into the holiday season, there is so much stress, and people do feel this lack of time and resources. And you know, for some things, you got to plan for ingredients well in advance, and you know, it can really build up on a person. What do you do if you start to feel stressed out about it all? You've tried to do your planning and follow your ideas, but still you're anxiety-ridden. Do you have any, other than drinking a lot, which may not be what you want early in the day when you're cooking, what do you think about techniques to cope with that anxiety?
Yeah, well, you know, it depends when you're feeling that anxiety. I guess I would say, you know, if it's right beforehand, there's not a lot of time to, you know, use proper techniques to alleviate that. But, you know, do things that you would normally do when you have anxiety, whether it's at work or, you know, some other social reason, like try to get outside, go for a walk, you know, enjoy nature, play with your dog, you know, do the things that you normally do to help yourself relieve that anxiety. And it's different for everybody, but like I try to leave time when I'm having a party, you know, if it's the winter, like a bubble bath that day. It makes me feel like I've gotten some time for myself and I have some time to kind of de-stress and just enjoy, you know, the day for myself. But, you know, just use those techniques that work for you. They're different for everybody, so it's hard to kind of give a blanket, you know, yeah, way to cope.
But take a break. Give yourself that little bit of something.
Yeah, take a break. And, yeah, you know, the other thing is I talk about this in the blog as well, the psychology of cooking, because stress is one of the things that can really throw you off. You know, and there's different techniques you can do. You know, one day I was actually having a huge party, and people were coming in from other locations, and that morning I got horrible news, like the kind of news where you just want to, you know, take the covers, put them over your head and not get out of bed. And, you know, the thought that went through my head is, I don't know if I can do this and maybe I should cancel it. And then I realized, you know, that's not right. People are putting in a lot of effort to come to this, and it's not about me, it's about them. And I have to find a way to take this bad news and put it away. Because you know what? Bad news, you have to deal with it sometime, but tomorrow is fine. You don't always have to deal with it today. And so it's kind of the same thing about stress, is remembering it's not really about you, it's about those guests, it's all about them and making them feel good, and realizing that if you're stressed and have a lot of anxiety, they're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Do you think that comes through in the food? Do you think the emotions that you're feeling when you're cooking, there's a lot of, you know, literature and you know, stories,
I mean,
about
it
that.
Does for me. You know, there's movies about it, like Water for Chocolate, right, and other things. But, you know, I really feel that it comes through in cooking and what you're presenting, and also the environment that you're creating. You know, and the other thing is, ask for help. You know, generally you have someone around you, like, you know, your best friend is coming. They're more than happy to help you. Just, you know, say, I've had this horrible, I'm really stressed and anxious. Can you help me with making this party, like, you know, being up and happy and helping me with people? And they're happy to do that, you know? So use those people, because they don't mind. They're your friend.
A lot of good advice and ideas. We've been talking with Sandra Richardson, the Constrained Gourmet. Tell our listeners how they can get to your blog and check out all your social media
stuff.
Yes,
please visit me on constrainedgourmet.com. I'm also on Twitter at @BeatConstraints. I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook. So please feel free to reach out to me. You can send me questions at any time. I'm always happy to help.
Thank you for coming in. You're excellent on doing this. I hope you can come back sometime.
I would love to. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. And we're all out of time for today's Wine Country Live. Thanks for listening in.